Hey everyone, and welcome to another edition of Responsive Design Podcast. My name is Justin Avery, and I'm your host and curator of the podcast and the Responsive Design Weekly Newsletter. This is episode number 54. Thank you very much for downloading and listening. Today we're going to talk about two little things. One about progressive web apps from a article which Jason Grigsby has just written from the Cloud 4 blog, and also about improving your performance for responsive images as well. I decided to make a couple of changes on the responsive design site, and I had some really good results. So I thought, you know, share. We're all friends. We can share. And hopefully you'll be able to pick up a couple of things and be able to implement them on your own site. It literally took me my train journey into work to implement, and I shaved off some good time, but we'll get to that in a little bit anyway, so stick around. That'll be the second part, so you do have to listen for a little bit. I'm sorry. But this week's episode is brought to you by the MobX Conference, so big shout out to MobX Conference. The team there is super awesome. They've got a conference coming up soon. If you are in Europe or the UK, now that they have left Europe, I highly recommend going along to it. It is a very, very cool conference, all focused around mobile user experience and user experience in general. They've got some progressive stuff going on this year as well. It is on the 9th of September in it's a Friday this year. The 9th of September, it is in Berlin at the Kino International. It's a great big cinema. They've got a huge big screen, apparently the largest screen in Europe, which is super awesome. I can hear something ringing. That's really weird. Ah, no, it's my dad's birthday today. Well, tomorrow in Australia. And he is trying to call me on Facebook, which is quite weird because I don't know anyone that calls on Facebook. But we will get back to him because he won't be able to answer it anyway. Sorry, Dad. But happy birthday to you. If you are listening and you've downloaded it, I didn't mean to ignore your call here. But we're going to continue on anyway. But yeah, so I would definitely go and check out MobX Conference. If you are heading there, I have a very cool, they've been very nice and they've given us a code that you can use. So if you use the code RWD podcast, you get €60 off the ticket. I can't recommend it any more than I already have. I spoke there last year. The crowd is super friendly. The speakers are super intelligent. They're very good. And the whole thing, the whole atmosphere there was just, it was really, really good. There's lots of good parties beforehand and afterwards, lunch breaks, everyone was chatting. It's very good. So definitely get along to that. So thank you very much, MobX, for sponsoring this episode as well. Now, what I wanted to talk about or look at was this article from Jason Grigsby at Cloud 4. And he was talking about the approach to progressive web apps. Now, he's spoken about things in the past. Now, I really love the way that Jason writes his articles. He takes a lot of time. He researches the topic. I'm completely opposite. I fly off the handle. I often go back and reread things. I'm like, what were you talking about? Why don't you read about that a bit more? You should have formed a better opinion. But he takes his time. He doesn't just publish stuff out there. He often writes and then seeks a lot of industry leaders and his peers to feedback on the article before he publishes it. And he has done exactly the same here. He released a really good set of articles around responsive images. I think it was like a 6-series set. And we covered all of them in the newsletter, obviously, but they were just terrifically written about the different aspects. So this week he's written one, or over the last couple of weeks, about progressive web apps. Now, rather than talk, because at the moment, what we see a lot of is people are talking about how to implement progressive web apps from a really technical point of view. And we did this with responsive design back in the day as well. We kind of went, well, it's made up of three ingredients, and this is how you do it from a technical, like this is how you make your grids, this is how you make your columns percentage and fluid. This is how you make your images stretchy, and this is how you apply media queries. But we never talked about why you would do it or how you would shape it, when you would set your breakpoints based on your design and things like that. That came later. Now, all the articles that we've had so far about progressive web apps have been very similar. They've all been about this is how you go into HTTPS, and this is how you add a service worker, and these are the bits you can copy and paste in and add the pages that you want or the resources that you want cached in this bit here, and this is how you clear it, and which is great because we need to start doing it, and we need to add these things in, and we can add them in very quickly by following these articles. But we don't really have a look at how that affects the wider reason behind what we're doing or whether it's the best implementation and how to reach a wider audience and to make sure that it's done in a good way. If we look at, again, look at responsive design as an example, there were many implementations of responsive design that we just didn't think about. We decided to move desktop sites into mobile, using things or building sites that would be kind of okay on a super fast broadband connection on a giant screen, and then squeezing it into a tiny viewport on a 2G connection, and it just didn't work. And as a result, responsive design got flayed. Like, it was just, it got beaten to death by several people, by a lot of people, really. And it wasn't so much the technique, it was the approach and the implementation of the technique. And the same thing could go with progressive web apps as well. If we don't think about the wider reach and what we're trying to do and really think about the strategy of the approach, then it will get tarnished with a kind of crappy brush in the same way that responsive design did. And it took a long time to get over that as well. I think that's just the way things are with anything that's new. Everyone rushes out to do it, does it wrong, which is great because we learn from that. But then it gets tarred with a crappy brush. So this isn't about implementing this and adding service workers and caching and celebrating and stuff. It's about the logistics of the design and the approach as well. So he really focuses around tough things like what is the change between an app and a website. This is an age-old question that's been around for a while. I know Jeremy Keith often talks about this as well, and we all kind of get back to the thing is, like, does it really matter? Like, do we need to define it? Can we just create something, and if it works offline or as an app as well, then it works offline and as an app as well. But when it becomes an app, is there a different expectation for the user? Do they expect more of it? Do they expect less of it? Do they expect it to have a different context? Do they expect a different design when it's a native app as well? And then when it comes to the design side of things, a progressive web app is effectively, it's a web app. So we used to access it on the web, and a lot of the web apps that we access these days are very much browser-based. They're all browser-based, really, because the web is accessed on a browser. It means they're very much desktop-based when you're accessing them. So when I think of a web app, I think of Gmail, right? And then you've got a native alternative, which you have on your phone. But when you're in the browser, you look at Gmail. Facebook is kind of a web app in the browser, but then you've got a native version on your phone. But at what point, when it comes to the phone with a progressive web app, how do we then deal with it? Like, it was a website and now it's an app. So then do we need to design it in a different way? All right, so does it need to be more native? And he goes into details about one of the Google, one of the people that worked for Google on this, which I think his name's Owen, and I forget his last name. I apologize, Owen. And he was saying that if you're doing a progressive web app, you should really think native first. And although Jason doesn't disagree with his approach there or say it's the wrong approach, I kind of feel that it is. I don't think that you should be looking at a progressive web app and going, well, now that we are going to be an app, let's think native first. Because at the end of the day, it's progressively becoming this app. Not, it's, that's where it's starting. But then what expectations does the user have? We go back to that. Like, should we match, if it's on iOS, then do we need to have iOS type native features for the progressive web app on iOS? And on the flip side, for Android, should we be designing it in a way that is more Android focused? So different sets of UIs depending on the type of device that it's being consumed as. And so that ends up, we're just kind of creating different code bases almost. And we go back to the problem that native has, where you have this one app that you want to push out, but you've got to design it in 2, 3, 4 different ways to match all of the different native platforms. So it's probably not the best way to go. And that's why PhoneGap became really, really popular for a long time, is that you're able to build a single code base and then push out, and then it would PhoneGap would replace the UI to match the native OS that it was being exported to. So if we're not modifying, if we're not going to be modifying UI, then we should be making it consistent. So one of those things is, and I think MailChimp do this very well, is that their web app is essentially, their native app is essentially a wrapper for their web app. Slack do this as well, where they just load it in. So the native UI for it isn't native in respects to the device or the operating system. It's native to that brand. And if we start building things like that, then people that are using it on the web then suddenly use it on their phone, they still look at it like it's a website kind of thing, or a web app, and they don't expect it to have all the native controls as well. And I really like that idea, is that we can start having, we don't think of things as native, we think of things as webby. And I think over time that is how it should go. That's what I think anyway. And I think Jason is heading in that direction anyway. Jason does a very good job in his article of not jumping on sides. I have a harder time not doing that. But there's the other thing as well. So if they are going to apply different designs, just say the whole thing with a progressive web app, you visit it on your phone and you visit it through the browser to begin with. And when you access the progressive web app, after you've accessed it a couple of times, then it will pop up and say, hey, do you want to add me to your home screen? Now, at that point, before that happens, you've kind of got this web UI. And then if you want to make it more appy and more native, then once they add it to the home screen, then you have to change the way it looks and feels and operates. But I think the user's already happy with the way it was doing that. So when they added it to the home screen, why should it then change? I think that's just the wrong approach. Anyway, the other problem with that is that once they do add it to the home screen, and again, Jason touches on this, is that when they open it, you lose the browser Chrome. So once you've added the progressive web app to your home screen, it then becomes more appy, or you're able to access in that way. You lose the browser Chrome, so it doesn't display anymore. So then you've lost your sort of back and forward buttons. And he points out a really cool thing where there is a couple of, within the web app manifest, there's a few types of media queries that you can apply, something different, which is called display modes. So you can set if the display mode is standalone or if it's full screen, in the same way that you might set it if it's landscape or portrait, means that it's a standalone application or it's a full screen application, which means you don't have access to the browser Chrome, which means that you might then show back buttons or not show them. So if you've got the browser Chrome there, you don't need to show a back button. But if you do have it there, then you probably do need to show the back button as well. So I think that's kind of cool. And I think the last point that he touched on as well is how do we deal with, I spoke about Facebook earlier. If Facebook becomes a progressive web app, their native apps, there's many native apps for Facebook. So, well, there's two at least that I use, which is the regular Facebook app and then the Messenger app. Which is probably what Dad, happy birthday, Dad, was trying to call me on. But when you're on a website, everything is encompassed in the same thing. So Facebook.com has Messenger embedded within it as well as the rest of Facebook. So if you switch that to a progressive web app, what do you then do with the Messenger? do you then set that up as a separate progressive web app, even though it belongs to the same URL and the same domain when you were using it previously? So that's then changing the way that people are using it between whether it's a webby thing or a progressive web app thing. So it's something, the difficulty is like, how do you divide them up? And he goes in to explain how Yahoo have done that quite successfully. So the whole article raises all these problems and he suggests some alternatives and some possible solutions to them. But it is just, it's an exceptionally well-written article. So I highly recommend that. Check it out in the show notes, or of course, you are all subscribed to the Responsive Design Weekly newsletter. So you will see that in the headline anyway. The next thing that I wanted to touch on, the one other thing I wanted to touch on, was making your site faster. So I'm big on performance. I'm super keen to get things as fast as possible. And I've got a page on the responsivedesign.is site. If we type it in here, so it's responsivedesign.is/examples. And what I do is I just try and show some awesome examples of some responsive designed sites. Now, if you have a responsively designed site that you've recently published and you think it looks awesome and you think it should be part of the examples section and inspire people to do awesome stuff, shoot me a message, let me know, and I will endeavor to add it to the list and feature it as well. Now, what I have on the page, essentially what it is, it's just a series of different sites. So when you go there at the moment, Field Notes is first, and then there's Offscreen Magazine, Outdated Browsers, Trent Walton's site, Founders Mattress, a typographic conference, the Forecaster Interactive, a whole bunch of different websites where we look at it and talk about how it was built. But I've got these big screenshots using the MI Responsive tool to showcase how they look across the different viewports, so large desktop, laptop, tablet, and mobile. Now, the problem is I think I list like maybe 10 of them, and each image has got to be weighing in at a couple of hundred kilobytes at least, so maybe 150, 200. The Field Notes is 155, okay? So if you've got 10 of those, that's 1.5 meg already in images that we're requesting. So the page can be quite heavy. Now, it's not unusual to have or want pages with lots of images, but when you load this page, all you can see for most viewports is the very first image. The rest of them are all hidden. Now, if people don't scroll down through all 10, then I'm downloading a whole bunch of images and using up a whole bunch of bandwidth for no reason, because you're not going to see them, but I'm making you download them anyway. So that's when this really cool thing called lazy sizes comes in to help. Now, if I go to lazy sizes, and again, this will be in the show notes, but what it is, it's a vanilla JavaScript file that you can just drop into your page. I have dropped it in only on this page. Now, it's asynchronously called. It doesn't rely on jQuery, so you can kind of drop it anywhere, and it works really, really well. And so what it does is it allows you to use a data attribute as part of the image tag and then lazy load them in. So what I've done, I've used a CMS and I can target lists. So when you're doing a loop for something, so if you're using WordPress or something else, Drupal, or whatever you're using, when you're doing a listing, you should be able to say, I want the first listing to have this HTML spat out, and then every other listing I want something different. Or you just say, I want all listings to have this HTML spat out. It doesn't matter. For me, I want to load in the image tag properly for the first response, because I'm very, very sure that is going to be viewed every time. And for the rest of them, I don't so much matter if the image doesn't load, because it still has a very descriptive alt text and it has a link to take you to the page to show you the example where the images load as per normal. So I don't mind if only the first image loads. You might be a bit different. But all what you need to do is, once you've dropped this JavaScript at the bottom of your page, you then update your image tag. So for me, I have a normal source and then I do a source set as well. Now, what my source set does is I have a bunch of different widths. So I have a 1600 pixel image, a 1024 image, a 500 pixel image, and a 350 pixel image as well. Now, they're my sizes that I use for my source set. And by default, I load the 350 pixel wide image as the regular image, so the regular source. Now, I've already got that set up, so that's working fine. So what I did is I just changed that and just added data dash in front of those. So it's essentially creating different attributes. So instead of having source set and source, you have data dash source set and data dash source. Otherwise, you don't need to touch it from what you would normally have. Then you add the class lazy load, which then indicates that that needs to be lazy loaded in. And because we've dropped the minified JavaScript in there already, it detects that it's got the lazy load. And then when the image nearly gets into the viewport, it changes data-source into just source, and it goes and fetches the image for you. The other thing that it's got as well is I use the sizes attribute with for the responsive images so that the browser can be a little bit more intelligent about the type of image that it's requesting. And for this, you set data. So you set your sizes, so data-sizes, to auto, and it will configure that for you and work out what it needs to bring back as well. So just adding that. So again, going back through it, I print out the first image as per normal, nothing changed. And then for all the images after that, I add data dash in front of the sizes and the source set and the source. And I've included the JavaScript as well. And just doing that on regular load, I've saved between 0.9 seconds and 2.6 seconds for the load of that page, which is huge considering that the page was already optimized. It was serving out of Cloudflare as well. But it's dropped a huge amount of time for one for the load, but then also saves a whole bunch of bandwidth for people that are only interested in seeing the very first thing or a couple of things as well. So definitely check that out. Again, I'll put the link in there, but it's called Lazy Sizes. So if you go to github.com/afarkas, so afarkas/lazy sizes. Very, very cool. Very easy to implement. Like I said, my train ride in the morning is about 40 minutes. I had it set and sorted within that time. So it's a really quick win, and there's not any knock-on effects that I've seen. If you do have some issues with it, please let me know, because I don't want to tell a whole bunch of people to go and use this if there's going to be some issues with it. But looking through the GitHub issues list, there's not too many at all. And anything which does come up gets answered pretty quick. There's 4 pull requests, so there's lots of people contributing to it as well. And the last update was a month ago, 2 months ago, which is quite cool. So it's still pretty active as well. So definitely go check that out if you want a faster website, which we all do as well. That's it, everyone. Thank you very much for tuning in again. Next week I'll be back with another short podcast. The other thing that's coming up as well, and I'm not sure if you are in the UK and you can't make it across to the MobX, I highly recommend going down and checking out the Reasons to conference. Awesome conference run by a guy called John Davey. I met him over at the Beyond Telerand conference, which is another amazing conference. But I'm heading down to the Reasons to conference on September 5th, 6th, and 7th. If you're going to be around, tweet me. I'm at Justin Avery or at ResWebDez. Let me know if you're there. And we should catch up and say hi and listen to some amazing speakers. So one person that I've been looking forward to seeing for such a long time is, oh my goodness, I'm looking through these amazing speakers. Jessica Hish, who's a letterer and just an all-round, seems like an awesome person. I've seen a couple of her talks online. But also Mr. Bingo's there as well, who I have seen speak before, who is super funny, if not incredibly crude. But well worth checking out anyway. So yeah, there's reasons to in Brighton if you're around 5th, 6th and 7th of September. And to get there, go to reasons.2 and make it really easy. But yeah, like I said, that's it. Rate us up in the podcaster listener of your choice. Rate us 5 stars in iTunes. That would be awesome. Tell your friends about it. And I will be back again next week. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you then. Bye. Oh, and Dad, happy birthday again. Sorry I didn't answer the call. Calling you now. Cheers. Bye.